Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and earned a BA degree from St. Charles Seminary and a Master of Divinity from St. John's Seminary. In 1967, he was ordained a priest and has been a world-class salesman for God in Pennsylvania, California, Michigan, and now Florida. He served in various positions with a number of healthcare systems, and for 6 years he was the president of the United States Conference of Secular Institutes. His name? Father George Hasler. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Father George Hasler, a man that I've admired for 20 years. Father, welcome. A real honor to have you on as our show.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you so much.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Oh, certainly, Jack. I had really the pleasure of growing up in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, amidst the smokestacks of Bethlehem Steel, just a few blocks from the blast furnaces, and attended grade school and high school in Bethlehem, and just had the most wonderful mother and father, both of them very hardworking, both of them very, very gifted. They both had special gifts, and especially in how they dealt with people, you know, very outgoing, very friendly, and I think those are the gifts that I've inherited from them. So it was just a great treat growing up in Bethlehem, having that experience, and being with a great mother and father.
Speaking of gifts, what's the biggest thing, Father, you learned from your mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from your dad?
Jack, you know, that's an interesting question, because I would say that, you know, they were such a balanced couple, and I think the greatest thing that I learned from both of them was helping others and always going that second mile. You know, if someone did something for them, they would outdo that by doing more for the next person. And that's how they trained us, you know, always giving and always appreciative of God's gift and sharing those gifts. So to me, that was the biggest thing I learned from them.
When was it you realized you had a vocation to be a priest?
Oh, Jack, goes way back to grade school. Probably, I would say, about third or fourth grade. I was quite enamored with the priests of our parish who were just very gracious and very kind and very self-serving. And I was inspired by them. But I also must say that I was inspired by the sisters who taught us in grade school. You know, they always spoke to us about vocations. And I guess what triggered it off was the pastor said to me one day, I guess it was third or fourth grade, he just asked me if I ever thought of becoming a priest. So I think he planted the seed, and God took over the rest.
You know, when we were young, arguably the greatest honor for a mom was to have a son become a priest or a daughter a nun.
Yeah.
That's changed. If there's a listener tonight who thinks that one of their children possibly has a vocation, what would you say to that parent, Father?
Oh, I think that the most you could do is to really encourage, you know, that child, because nowadays it seems that let's face it, with everything that's going on in the church these days, it's very, very difficult. But at the same time, you know, I think a parent really has to notice the gifts and the talents in the child. It's usually our gifts and our talents that dictate our vocation in life. And I think all kids need is just a little bit of encouragement.
You got into the healthcare industry, and you worked there for 20-plus years. How did you get into the healthcare industry?
That's interesting. Well, first of all, I think when I was first ordained a priest, I was stationed in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and part of the parish, it was a Sacred Heart Church, and we also had Sacred Heart Hospital, and part of our responsibilities as a newly ordained priest was to minister in the hospital, and because they did not have chaplains in those days, And of everything that I did in my ministry, from pastoral ministry in the parish to teaching in high school, the thing I loved the most was healthcare, and especially, you know, Catholic healthcare, because as far as Catholic healthcare went, it was more than an industry; it was a ministry, and I basically following the life of Jesus Christ. You know, I would say 90% of his ministry was healthcare. And to be faithful to Jesus and his healing ministry, you know, I always believed and thought that an identifiable Catholic presence had to be in healthcare. I always thought that the church had to be involved in healthcare in order to fully respond to the mission of Jesus. And so that's how I got into it, and I spent over 30 years in healthcare ministry.
What did you learn from the patients that you served and ministered to in those 20 years?
What I learned from them, I learned so much from them, Jack. I think the saying is you get more than you give. And I've been so touched and so impressed by all the people that I served over these years of how graceful most people, by far the majority of people, were graceful in their hospitalization. So appreciative of love that was given to them, they're responding to love, but just how people suffered patiently, and that's what helped me so much to continue to serve. It's an incredible grace that you receive in working with the sick.
Speaking about suffering gracefully, what we've watched this last 10 days in Japan,
with
the people in the lines, Father, rioting, you know?
I know.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, that has really touched me. I was watching people line up for water and food, and everybody was in line very patiently, very quiet, very serene. Those folks really have a gift, a special gift.
Why does God allow all of this suffering, Father?
Oh, Jack, that's a good question. Many books have been written on the subject of why God allows bad things to happen to good people, and I don't think so much as that God allows it. It's just all part of our human condition. It's all part of nature. It's who we are. You know, when you look at, you know, Jesus's son, how much he suffered, and you know, we look at the sufferings of Christ basically during Passion Week. As he enters Jerusalem to the crucifixion, but you look at all the suffering that he endured all through his life. You know, not being accepted by his own people. And being ridiculed many times over. There's his whole life was full of suffering.
We're talking to Father George Hasler, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Father George Hasler, who's been a fantastic salesman for God for 44 years. Father, if there's some elderly people listening tonight who are suffering and feeling that they no longer have any value and they just want to die, what do you say to them?
Oh, Jack, that's really a tough one. You know, I think I learned the most while I was with regard to elderly people, I learned the most when I was working out in California with the Daughters of Charity Health System. And in addition to my work in healthcare at the hospitals, we had hospitals in Northern and Southern California. But I was also chaplain to the sisters at their provincial house in Los Altos Hills. And across the road from the health system office was Laboure, named after St. Catherine Laboure. And it was the retirement center for the Daughters of Charity. And I would say there were sisters there ranging from in their 70s, wait until their late 90s, with all kinds of maladies, all kinds of infirmities. And these were women who gave their entire life to serving the sick, to teaching children, to running orphanages. And I would visit them and sometimes also celebrate Mass for them if I wasn't celebrating Mass at the provincial house. And I would watch them day in and day out and how they suffered quietly. But also what always inspired me was that all those sisters, you know, still had an active ministry. So they weren't considered, you know, retired or kind of put on the shelf and just ignore them. But these sisters had a very active ministry within the province, and it was the prayer ministry. And they would spend their lives in prayer and very much at peace. But they were also surrounded you know, by people who cared for them and people who loved them. I guess the hardest thing for me to see is, you know, someone elderly who's abandoned. And sometimes, you know, I've seen families, you know, abandon the elderly, and whether intentionally or not. And I think that is a travesty, is that no one should be alone in their old age, and especially if they're infirm. They need to be surrounded by love. They need to be surrounded by encouragement. A simple visit, a simple smile, a simple note, a simple phone call, that really makes their day. And to me, that is what's so important, is that we're cognizant of these people in our parishes, and that we also reach out to them, visit them. You know, that's the greatest corporal work of mercy, and that's how we're going to be judged at the end of time. You know, Jesus said, He separates the sheep from the goats based on our corporal works of mercy, or lack thereof. And they have a ministry, and I think sometimes we need to point out to people, you know, in their infirmities, that they do have a ministry, and if prayer is a powerful ministry in the church. So that's what I would say to them and encourage them, and that's what I've done.
I've heard, you know, that when one's going on to the ultimate championship, all they want is the loved ones in the room.
Yeah.
But being with my mom 8 years ago when she passed, and my dad a year ago, I think one of the greatest gifts a child can have is to be in that room when their parents. Why is that, Father?
Well, I think, you know, we see kind of it's life, you know, it's our own flesh and blood. It's so consoling. I often feel for people who die alone, and that's one thing that I learned in many of our hospitals that I served in, whether it was in Pontiac or Southfield or Los Altos Hills or Los Angeles. The special ministry that the Catholic hospitals always had with those who were dying, to make sure that they were not alone, that someone was always in the room with them 24 hours a day, but most of all family, you know, to have family with them. It's, you know, some people are frightened, you know, when they're dying. And then some people, of course, you know, aren't even aware of their dying because of being in a coma or severely injured or because of the medication that they're on. But for some, I've seen it for some who are alive and fully aware of the dying process, that it's very hard and it's very scary for some. But also, I also find is that sometimes they need encouragement. They need to know that you're allowing them to die. Sometimes people will hold off until they hear someone from the family actually say to them, you know, Mom or Dad, it's okay. It's okay with us if you leave us now. You know, we will continue to love you, but it's okay. We'll be okay. And it's amazing how assuring that is for some people in the death process.
That happened with my dad, Father. Yeah. Very often you're in these hospitals and the doctor comes in for 5 minutes a day, you know, and he's going to come back tomorrow at 3 p.m., between 3 and 5 p.m., and it's the nurses that are doing everything. Talk to us about the ministry of nursing.
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I keep looking back, and this goes back to 1987, when Pope John Paul II came to Phoenix, Arizona. And sometimes many people even forget about this, but he deliberately met with healthcare workers in Phoenix, Arizona. Most of them were Catholic healthcare workers from Catholic hospitals, rather. But, you know, many of the people in the hospitals are not of Catholic faith. But anyway, I'll never forget what he said to them when he addressed them. He said, referring to their service in the hospital and caring for the sick, he said, "This is the high dignity to which you and your colleagues are called. This is your vocation, your commitment, and the path of your specific witness to the presence of God's kingdom in the world." And he went on to say, he said, "Your healthcare ministry is one of the most vital apostolates of the church community, and one of the most significant services which the Catholic Church offers to society in the name of Jesus." You know, when I heard those words, I wasn't there, but when I heard them and read them afterward, I thought he really hit the nail on the head. Because, you know, even though we're working in a hospital that's identified as Catholic, let's face it, the majority of the people working in the hospital, I would say the majority, are not of the Catholic faith. But, you know, in the orientation, which I did orientation for so many years of new employees, every Monday morning, a new batch of employees coming in, and I was always instilling in them, you know, who we are and why what we do is a little bit different than what might be done in another hospital that, that is not a Catholic hospital or that's just a not-for-profit or even a for-profit. There's a big difference. There's a whole different layer of compassion and love. It's that bringing the presence of Christ into the world but and into the hospital. But it was very interesting that the people who did come to work there in our Catholic hospitals, even though they weren't Catholic, they were there because of who we were. And that always fascinated me because I would ask people point blank, you know, you're not of our faith. Why are you here? Well, they would say, I believe in the same values, you know, and I want to be here because of who you are. So it immediately it ties everybody together in not an industry, but a ministry of healthcare.
You've been a salesman and a world-class salesman for God for 44 years, Father Hessler. What's the basic thing that you've been selling?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I'm world class. We'll start there. That's quite generous of you. But to me, the greatest thing, if we want to look at it from a sales point of view, is selling God's love. That to me is the biggest because, you know, I have found over and over again in speaking to people one on one. That they really question if God really loves them. And sometimes they'll even say to me, well, you know, if you know about me as I know about me, you wouldn't say that. And I said, well, it doesn't matter. It's God knows you, and God knows you. God has created you in his image and likeness, and God does not make junk, for starters, okay? So God loves you, you know? And to me, that is the most powerful message that I've worked on for the 44 years that I've been a priest, is to just let people know that God loves them. You know, it's interesting, Mother Teresa and her sisters, she always instructed the sisters not to preach to the people about Jesus Christ. She would tell them definitely, she said, do not preach to the people you're serving about Jesus Christ. She said, be Jesus Christ to them. And they will get the message. And that is so powerful. And I think that's what I've been trying to do. I don't know if it's a world-class distinction, but I've been really trying to do that, Jack, of just trying to be Jesus to people, you know, be approachable, be available, and in all that you're vulnerable, but you bring God's love to people. Let them see it in us. And that goes for all of us, not only the priests.
Anyone that knows Father George Hessler would say he does that very well. Day in and day out. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Rasul on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Father George Hessler, who currently is a salesman for God in the Naples, Florida area. Father, 44 years a priest, so 44 times 365, you've said Mass over 16,000 times.
Wow.
And in the Catholic faith, we believe that body and blood turn into body and blood of Christ. When you hold that host and that wine up, what do you do each time, and do you ever say anything to yourself?
Oh, Jack, that is a very, very interesting question. Yes, with, you know, as a Catholic who have the privilege of consecrating, you know, the bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ, I think the first thing that overwhelms me, and it continues to even after 44 years, continues to overwhelm me is that this is happening as I pronounce these words. I mean, that takes a lot of faith, but it's also very humbling. Because at that split moment, during those words of consecration, at that split moment, you know, I look at the emptiness in my own personal life, I look at the unworthiness in my own personal life. My whole life practically flashes in front of me at that moment. You know, the things I've done, the things I haven't done, everything, and to think that, that God works through me at that moment in such a unique and special way. It's quite humbling, Jack, and it's very emotional for me, even after 44 years, because to me, to celebrate the Eucharist, to celebrate Mass, is really the high point of my day. That is the greatest gift that I have and the greatest gift that I can give. But, you know, as I hold up that host and I hold up that chalice and the people gaze upon that at, in the Eucharist, I always say a quiet prayer, asking Jesus to reach out and touch every single human being in that church at that moment, to touch them in a very unique and special way, to soften their hearts if they need to be softened, to help them in their sickness, to help them in their anxieties and their frustrations, to just know that they are loved. And that's the prayer that I say quietly to myself as I'm holding up the host and the chalice in front of the people. I said, Lord Jesus, reach out and touch these people at this moment and let them all leave here, you know, filled with your presence and knowing that you love them. That's my quiet prayer for 44 years.
A couple minutes after you do that in each Mass, we then recite the Our Father.
Right.
And there's one part we say, not my will, but thine be done. Very easy to say, but
that's easy to say.
Not very hard to live.
That's for sure.
What's the key, Father George, to surrendering to God?
Oh, Jack. that's a powerful question. And you know, it's very interesting because the institute to which I belong, in the church there are religious institutes and secular institutes, and I belong to a secular institute. And the title of our institute is Voluntas Dei, which translates Will of God. And when I had the privilege of meeting with our founder years ago, he has since died this past couple of about the past year. In meeting with him, he would always say to us, he said, "Remember the name of our institute. It's Voluntas Dei, which means Will of God, and not Voluntas Mei," which means my will. And that is a specific challenge for us, you know, who belong to the Institute, to live out that Voluntas Dei, because the Voluntas Mei keeps creeping in over and over again. You know, we say in the Our Father, you know, thy will be done, but if you're anything like myself, I usually tell God how to do it, and I want it done within the next 48 hours. I kind of give him all the specifics of how I would like his will to be done. And that might be true of many people. But to totally surrender yourself to God's will, you know, it works. You know, and I've learned that in my ministry. Because in my 44 years, I have never asked to be assigned to a specific place, whether I was in the other community in which I served, but now in the Institute. I never asked. I was always invited. I was always called. You know, we talk about vocation being the call. Well, it's very interesting because, you know, I was down here in Naples, Florida, 11 years ago, 99 to 01, thinking that I was going to stay here the rest of my life. And in July of 01, I got this call, a phone call, from the Daughters of Charity, who I worked with in Southfield, Michigan, now in serving in California, and they said, you know, we need some help in our health system out here, and we need for you to do the piece that you can do for us. And so that was a call that was out of, you know, as they say, out of the clear blue. So to me, I always interpreted those calls, those invitations, you know, as God's will for me. And even like last year when I was down here for some R&R, the pastor of the parish said, you know, George, is there any chance of you coming back here? We'd love to have you back at this parish. And to me, that was another invitation, you know. So I've always been invited. I've always been called. And to me, that is the will of God, you know, not doing my own thing. There's other things I'd like to do maybe. Now, granted, you know, it's nice to be in Naples compared to Michigan, but but that's how God's call worked this time.
Speaking of which, we've recently started Lent. What advice would you give to our listeners, Father George, about Lent?
The season of Lent, yeah. Well, I mentioned this to our parishioners on Ash Wednesday, and it's so beautiful to see a mobbed church down here. I mean, we had five masses on Ash Wednesday, all overflowing, and I was privileged to celebrate one of those masses. But I was mentioning to the people, you know, how years ago, if you recall, in school, we would always be asked, what are we going to give up for Lent? You know, and so we were going to give up candy, and we're going to give up movies, and we're going to give up this and that. And I thought to myself, well, that's very noble, and that's good, because there should be some self-denial in our life, and maybe we should give up something. That's good. But I like to address it as, what are we going to do for Lent? You know, that to me is the challenge. Sometimes giving up is very easy. It's the doing that's the real challenge. And so I, you know, ask myself and I ask the parishioners, I said, you know, what are we going to actually do for Lent? You know, and there's so much, you know, it's carrying out those corporal works of mercy, you know, which we just heard in the gospel recently, and of that's how we're going to be judged. So we have endless opportunities to do good for others. And I think that's the challenge during the season of Lent. And, of course, Lent is a time for us to renew ourselves, to continue to establish a good relationship with God, and to kind of get life back in its right perspective, you know, because sometimes all of us get off kilter a bit in our spiritual life. And, you know, we can resort to all kinds of things, you know, be it sex or drugs or alcohol or whatever it is. But, you know, we need to get back to the one who knows us the best, you know, not the therapist, but God, because we're created in his image and likeness. So he's the one we should consult with. And I think Lent is a great time to strengthen that relationship with God, you know, through our prayer, through our fasting, through our doing extra special for others. So that, to me, is the season of Lent. It's a time of getting life back in perspective. That's how I see it.
We're talking to Father George Hasler. Father, when you saw the movie The Passion, what screamed out the most to you?
You know, Jack, that's interesting. You know, I saw that when I was out in California, and I went with two of the Daughters of Charity. We went to the movie together. It was very interesting, you know, how different things, because, of course, we reflected on it afterward. The thing that your word was screamed out to me the most in that movie was the pain and the suffering of Mary, the mother of Jesus. I can still picture that scene where she's trying to see him as he's carrying the cross, and because of the crowd, she just can't get to see him. And one of the apostles knows a little shortcut through one of the alleys, and he gets her to go with him so that when she comes out of this doorway or this alleyway, she'll be right where he is. And that scene really is so embedded in my head, in my mind, and my whole being, was the suffering of Mary when the eyes of Jesus met the eyes of Mary at that moment. And, you know, we look at the pain and the suffering of Jesus through the whole Passion of the Christ, but that particular scene, you know, to see a mother, the mother's anguish and her helplessness in that scene, that really overwhelmed me. Of the whole movie, I think, you know, I can't picture too many other details, but that one just sticks with me as though I saw it just a couple of minutes ago, was the pain and suffering, the helplessness of Mary at that moment. But their eyes just touched, and her eyes were like eyes of encouragement, you know, that I'm with you, you're not alone. That's what screamed out at me, Jack.
We're talking to Father George Hasler, and I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Father George Hasler, who's served God as a priest for 44 years and done it in a great, great way. Father, before we know it, it will be Easter. What's the basic message of Easter?
Oh, the basic message of Easter. Jesus' triumph over death, of course, is so very, very obvious in the resurrection. But to me, the basic message of Easter once again, is God's great love for us, and as exhibited through His Son Jesus Christ. And the basic message of Easter, I think, follows through over and over again throughout of our whole life. And I think especially when Jesus first appeared to the apostles after the resurrection, He said to them, "Do not be afraid." We hear that over and over and over again throughout our whole life. And I think it's always good for us to reflect on the risen Christ in our sufferings, because it's that risen Christ, you know, who is saying to us over and over again, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Fear not." He said that to His apostles so many times. And, of course, they were absolutely frightened, you know. They think they're seeing a ghost, you know, and they knew He died. But it was that resurrection, that coming back to life, you know, where Jesus could say to us, "Do not be afraid." And, of course, His triumph over death, His triumph over suffering, that there's life beyond this, and it's the risen Lord that brings that message of hope to us. To me, it's a great basic message of hope and love.
Father Hasler, anybody who's had the pleasure of knowing you, or any listener tonight that's now hearing you for the first time, come away and say, you have a softness about you. There's a peacefulness about you. How do I get that, Father? What would you say?
Good question, Jack. The old saying is the nature of the beast, maybe. I don't know. But I guess I don't know how to be any way else. I think it's, you know, knowing who I am and being comfortable with myself and also having a sense of self-confidence, you know, the grace of God. I think that's what it is. And also, what helps me is my time of prayer. I begin every day with at least an hour, you know. So I'm up usually 3 hours before Mass time, to allow myself at least an hour and a half of prayer and just that solitude and the quiet. I think that's what it is. I know people say to me, you know, "You're so peaceful," and I think, well, I don't know how to be anything else but, because nothing else works. To me, peacefulness always works. And we see that in the life of Jesus. You know, I think that's what made Him so approachable, you know, to people. But it's also, you know, make yourself very vulnerable, you know. But it's the approachability, I think, that's so important, Jack. And maybe it's a gift. Maybe that's a gift also. And if it is, I'm grateful to God, you know, for that peacefulness.
Some people talk about that they try to spend an hour a day just being in the presence of God.
Mm-hmm.
How do you just sit there and be in the presence of God?
Well, Jack, you know, right now, you know, as we're talking right now, we're in the presence of God, you know, and God is everywhere. God is all around us. God is within us. You know, we are, as you know, growing up as a kid, we're always told we are the temples of the Holy Spirit. So God is dwelling within us. So, you know, I guess it's our understanding of the presence of God. You know, we have the Eucharistic presence of God in the Eucharist at Mass or in the Tabernacle or like a 40 hours devotion or, you know, Blessed Sacrament chapels and all that. And that's before the sacramental presence. But, you know, we're in the presence of God constantly. And that's what's so powerful and so beautiful about us who believe that. Because then we're going to live accordingly and we're going to act accordingly. And, you know, like just this morning, the gospel was about Jesus telling us how to pray the Our Father. And, you know, the big difference between, you know, saying prayers and praying. To me, prayer is conversation with God. I'm constantly talking to God and telling Him, you know, about this person or that person who needs help. I usually walk 4 miles a day, so that's when I kind of clear my head, and we have great conversations then. And but we're always in the presence of God, and so it's not a matter of what we do in the presence of God. It's just being. You know, just be yourself, and that's what I try to, just be myself in the presence of God. If I'm having a bad day, He certainly knows about it. but just being in that presence. You know, I always think of Bishop Sheen. You know, I always thought, when I grow up, I want to be like Bishop Sheen. I'm still working on it. But he mentions about, he always had that holy hour, and I remember him going. He mentioned when he went to Paris, and he was waiting for his train, and he went up to Sacre Coeur for his holy hour, and he sat down and he fell asleep, and exactly 1 hour later he woke up, and he said that was one of his best holy hours before the Lord and the Blessed Sacrament. So,
you mentioned that when you're having a tough day, Father George, do you ever get depressed or discouraged, and if so, how do you get over it?
Periodically I would get depressed or discouraged, but you know, immediately I always ask myself, what in the world triggered that off? You know, if I feel depression coming on or discouragement, the first thing a question that comes to my mind is, what triggered that off? You know, and 9 times out of 10, it might be something that someone said. You know, it's interesting. People could say positive things about you all day long. You could have 2,000 people say something positive. One person says a negative thing, and that's what we concentrate on. And maybe some therapists would have a field day working on that one. But I think that sometimes knocks us out, of course. It knocks us off track once in a while with someone. That you have to work it out and say, well, what triggered that off in that person's mind? Why did they say what they said? But and how do I get over that? Well, like I said, I go for my walk. You know, I do my walk and try to get some physical exercise. Physical exercise is always good, no matter what it is.
As our time winds down together tonight,
okay,
would you leave us in a short prayer?
Absolutely. And this is a prayer. It's called Trust, and it was written by Father Perrant, our founder. My little children, I am the solid rock. Where is your solidity? I am the fire that purifies. Why do you run from me? I am the water that quenches. Why do you hold on to your thirst? I am the truth. Why do you not come to me? I am strength. Why do you not lean on me? I am counsel. Why do you not listen to me? I am peace. Why do you not rest in me? I am joy. Why do you not smile? I am love. Why do you not trust me? Let yourself fall into my arms. My love is always yours. Amen.
Father George, every time I'm around you, it's a blessing for me and for most everybody that's ever around you. So thanks for all you do. Please keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jack, and pray for me.
I will.
Thanks, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Crisula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.